saving money when you start your next project today at Menards. Check out our great selection of garage and utility lighting options. In stock, ready to take home today. We carry everything to help you illuminate whatever project you're working on. Shop garage and utility lighting products in store at your nearest Menards. You can also view all of our entire selection of lighting options today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello and welcome. You're still getting over this cold. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show across the state of Georgia. Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan is going to join me at the bottom of this hour. The phone number, if you want to be a part of the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Glad to have you with me this morning. Listen, there's impeachment stuff we need to talk about. But before we get to the impeachment stuff, there's other stuff I want to talk about, and let me delve into this right now, frankly. This is something that happened the other day. The story continues to take on a life of its own, and it aggravates me, and I'm tired of talking about impeachment. I need to talk about impeachment. Impeachment is the news. I pride myself on talking to you about the news, but this is news too. So let's deal with this instead. A part of a cultural moment where we are in this country. You know, there's a case before the U.S. Supreme Court about Montana schools. In Montana, there was a scholarship, and the scholarship program allowed students to go to a private school to improve their education. And the Department of Revenue in Maine, or I'm sorry, Montana, it's in Montana, the Department of Revenue in Montana ruled that because the state constitution has a Blaine Amendment, kids who wanted to go to a private Christian school would be prohibited from using the money. You could only go to a private secular school. Well, the case was appealed to the Montana Supreme Court. Montana has what's called a Blaine Amendment. Many states have Blaine Amendments. Blaine Amendments were passed in the 1800s by an anti-Catholic politician. I think his name was James Blaine. Because as Catholics came to this country, their kids were going into Catholic schools. They weren't going into public school institutions. And so the Blaine Amendments were passed in various states saying no money could be used to advance religion. And they determined that going to a Catholic school advanced religion, therefore Catholic students Catholic schools could not get government money even though they were educating kids. These amendments have taken on a life of their own as the country has become more hostile to sectarianism, more hostile to Christianity. In fact, Blaine Amendments have taken on a larger life, but a number of members of the Supreme Court, and not just the conservatives, even Elena Kagan and Stephen Breyer have been hostile to keeping Blaine Amendments. The problem with this Montana case is the Montana case got to the Supreme Court of Montana, and Montana says, no, you can't actually use the school scholarship money for private Christian schools. And in fact, we're going to declare it unconstitutional altogether. You can't use this money for any private school, sectarian or secular. Well, the Christians have appealed, saying the only reason the Montana Supreme Court threw it out altogether was because of the Christian schools. And they're having that case before the Supreme Court. And that sets the stage for you, just so you understand, there is some latent hostility to Christianity out there in government institutions and in constitutions because of the Blaine Amendment. But what we're seeing now around the country is actually a real hostility to Christian education from secularists. So this is the story where I want to head to. Fifth Third Bank. I don't know that we have Fifth Third Bank here in Georgia where I am. We certainly have Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo and Fifth Third Bank have decided to stop funding an education program in Florida. In Florida, Florida has a program very much like what Georgia has, where you can get a tax credit for giving money to an education scholarship fund. It is a tax credit scholarship. So in Georgia, for example, if I give $1,000 to an education scholarship fund, I get a $1,000 tax credit. So if my tax bill is $1,000, I don't pay the bill because I've already paid $1,000 to the tax scholarship program. And then a family, a poor family that qualifies, can take that scholarship money and use it to send their kid to any private school of their choice. So, for example, you've got a poor kid in, let's just say Athens, Georgia. There's a Catholic school in Athens, Georgia. There's a poor kid in a failing Clark County school. The poor family can apply for the scholarship for the amount of money to go to the Catholic school. And the state will use this education scholarship money and allow that child to go to the Catholic school to get a better education. Or let's take it in a situation where I am. We've got a private Christian school that my church runs, First Presbyterian Day School in Macon, Georgia. A poor child can get the scholarship money from the state. They want to not go to a failing public school in Middle Georgia. They use that money and it gets them into the private Christian school, First Pres. Florida has a very similar program. And in Florida, a lot of corporations contribute to the tax credit scholarship. Two of those major corporations that have contributed to the tax scholarship are Fifth Third Bank and Wells Fargo. And Fifth Third Bank and Wells Fargo have decided that they are going to end participation in the scholarship program. And do you know why? Let me read you the key paragraph. An Orlando Sentinel analysis of 1,000 private religious schools that accepted state funding vouchers found that 83 of them barred the Alphabet Gang. So 83 of them barred LGBTQIAATP whatever students, sometimes the children of the Alphabet Gang parents, from attending the school. 73 additional schools said being gay or transgender was sinful, but didn't explicitly say how the stance affected admissions. So you get that out of 1,000 private schools participate, private religious schools participating, 83 of them insist on their Christian values being adhered to. Now, whether you agree or disagree, it is actually a matter of Christian orthodoxy that homosexuality is a sin and marriage is between a man and a woman. Now, I realize there are a lot of churches out there. We've got a big one near me now that does gay marriage. I realize that, but you have to redact parts of the Bible to get there. The homosexuality is a sin in the Bible, whether you like that or not. It just is. It was in the Old Testament. It is consistently attributed all the way through to the New Testament. And you can say you don't believe it, you don't buy it, that's fine. But the Bible says God is immutable, meaning he doesn't change. And by God, he's been very consistent between the Old Testament and the New Testament. What was the guy's name? He wrote the book on dating and basically said marriage, Josh, somebody, courtship. He's left his wife and he's now written that his values are no longer compatible with Christianity. And at least there are a lot of people who have tried to twist Christianity and say, oh yeah, this fits. This guy at least was intellectually honest by saying, no, actually, on the plain reading of scripture, it doesn't fit. And so I can't be Christian because I this is no longer compatible with my values. Thank you to this guy, Josh, what's his name, for at least being intellectually honest and braver than the people who say, oh, yeah, you can fit this into Christianity, despite the plain language of the Old and New Testament. And, you know, for those of you saying, well, you know, the Old Testament says don't have tattoos and don't eat shellfish. Those are the shibboleths of the damned. Those are the things people who don't understand Christianity say. The New Testament updates parts of the Old Testament and parts of the Old Testament remain consistent. The ceremonial law and the civil law of Israel no longer apply. The moral law still applies. The Old Testament prohibitions on adultery and drunkenness and homosexuality apply. They're rewritten in Corinthians. Jesus talks about marriage between a man and a woman. You can disagree with this, but don't try to say, oh, well, I'm a Christian and I believe this stuff. That's fine. You're a sinner. I'm a sinner. No big deal. But in the plain meaning of the faith, you can't. And so what's happening here in Florida is 83 schools are being targeted by the left because they're Christian schools that teach Christian values, and the left does not believe these Christians should be able to participate in a state scholarship program as long as they maintain their Christian orthodoxy. And now Fifth Third Bank and Wells Fargo have decided they're going to join the secular left and not support a scholarship program that helps poor kids because, horror of horrors, there are 83 schools that participated in this program, and one or two students might actually wind up in one of those schools. And horror of horrors, they might actually be Christians. Josh Harris. Yes, thank you. Philip sends me a note. Josh Harris, that's the guy's name. He wrote the book on courtship, and he's now apparently he's marched in a pride event, and he said Christianity actually is very clear. Homosexuality is a sin, and therefore I can't be a Christian. And God bless him for his intellectual honesty. I disagree with him. I actually pray for him because I think it's the only path to salvation, and he's walked away from it because he thinks it's incompatible with his moral view, but at least he's honest about it. You've got this Matthew Vine kid who wrote, oh, well, actually, we've been misreading the Bible for 2,000 years, and 2,000 years of orthodoxy is all wrong. I don't intend to start the show with religious broadcasting and culture war stuff, but it is very interesting to me how quickly Fortune 500 companies are willing to use their clout to pressure churches to abandon their orthodoxy in order to get money. And that's one of the things we find more and more in this country. It's not just in orthodoxy. It's across the board. How many people are willing to abandon their convictions for money? Our society is ripe with people selling out. The number of people who have accused me of selling out for supporting the president, I actually legitimately have decided, given the choice between him and them, I'll go with him in 2020. He's done a lot of stuff I like. And there are a lot of people who can't rationalize that, oh my gosh, Erickson may have changed his mind for a number of reasons. It's no, he must be getting money. And I can't really blame them because it's a pervasive attitude. They're certainly wrong, but it is a pervasive thing that's happening now. And Fortune 500 companies are leveraging their clout in this country, Wells Fargo and Fifth Third Bank now, punishing Christian students. And there's not a dispute as to these banks doing that, punishing Christian students, punishing poor students in particular. This is a program that allows poor kids to get better educations. But the gay rights movement has decided that if poor kids want to improve their education by going to a Christian school, they should be punished for doing that. And that goes back to the Supreme Court case today. The nation has to decide, can we accommodate each other's views? You know, the very first part of the First Amendment, if you listen to reporters, you would think that the First Amendment, the very first thing that it says is that you the freedom of the press. But that's not actually it. What is the very first clause of the First Amendment? Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. If you're allowing a kid to go to a school that is religious, you're not establishing a religion. You're allowing that child to do what? The second portion of the First Amendment, prohibiting the free exercise thereof. If you're telling a poor kid, if you want state money, you have to not go to a religious school. That is the Congress taking a side when it comes to religion, as opposed to letting the parents decide. Thankfully, the Supreme Court is headed in the right direction this here, and even Elena Kagan, to a degree, seems to be headed in this direction, one of the liberals on the Supreme Court, that, you know, the government's not imposing religion on anyone by letting a parent send their kid with taxpayer dollars to religious school. What is happening, though, is there's increasing hostility from secularists, including Fortune 500 companies and the Alphabet Gang, to anyone wanting to raise their kid as a Christian, that somehow they're bad as opposed to they just disagree. And what's happened here is we in society, on both sides of the aisle, by the way, as everybody's become more tribal, we've lost the ability to respect each other's differences in areas we disagree. And frankly, when people want to be defined by their sexuality, it's very easy to see how they then can view someone as hating them because they are in a Christian denomination that says the way they define themselves is sinful. They don't think they're a sinner. They think they were born this way. And if God makes everybody, then clearly they were born this way. And it's, frankly, it's a failure of the church that we're even having this argument. But the fact of the matter is we are seeing increasing hostility to people of faith in this country. And it's not because Christians are trying to impose their values on others. It's because others are trying to make Christians abandon their values. And here now come major corporations, major banks, Wells Fargo and Fifth Third Bank, joining the mob against the Christian in this country. And that's why we should all hope that the Supreme Court very forcefully defends the First Amendment and the right of kids to go to a religious school, even with a state scholarship, because they're coming for this stuff. It is absurd to me. And, you know, this ties into the faith-based adoption effort here in Georgia. The Speaker of the House, David Ralston, killing a commission that might protect faith-based adoption agencies. Because faith-based adoption agencies don't want to adopt to people outside their faith. And they should be able to do that. And what's happening in secular states is they're shutting down faith-based adoption agencies because the faith-based adoption agencies might say, hey, marriage is between a man and a woman. We can only allow adoption to a married heterosexual couple. So they would limit the number of entities that can help people adopt kids because they've decided to prioritize gay rights over adopting kids. In the same way, we're now being told in this country, Wells Fargo and Fifth Third Bank and other corporations are now telling us we've got to prioritize gay rights over kids getting a better education. When does the madness end? Because I got to tell you, a group of people who were willing to use their bodies as street lamps to light the streets of Rome 2,000 years ago when the Roman emperor was setting their bodies ablaze on crucified crosses as streetlights at night in Rome, they're not going to fold on this issue. Some of them will. Some of them have walked away from actual faith and twisted the faith and distorted the faith, but there will always be a very large segment. And by the way, it is globally several billion people, and the left wants them driven from society. This is why so many evangelicals are willing to support the president even though they don't like him. They recognize that the left is an existential threat to their ability to practice their faith, to, in the words of the First Amendment, engage in the free exercise of their religion.
I really do like his opinion on things.
Eric Erickson, the information you need and the truth you demand.
He tells it like it is.
Live every weekday.
You can call in if you like. The phone lines are open, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. At the bottom of this hour, Lieutenant Governor of Georgia Jeff Duncan is going to join me. He is pushing education scholarships here in Georgia. That actually, my opening of the show was not tied to that, but it actually is relevant to that as corporations. And, you know, by the way, you do need to understand here that what's actually going on is a lot of these corporations have been invaded by progressive activists. They're internally now making a lot of decisions. And as a result, they can easily be persuaded to drop anything that doesn't share of progressive values and not support conservatives. I got to tell you, the number of advertisers over time who have decided they don't want to advertise with conservatives, don't want to advertise here, is actually very interesting to me to see, because they're not progressive groups, but it is progressives internally who are making the decisions. So I'm a longtime customer of Harry's Razors. I mean, I was using Harry's Razors when they first got started, and a while back they stopped advertising with me. I still use Harry's Razors. They're still a fine product. But it was progressive complaints that had them walk away. They're a good razor company. I used them yesterday. I didn't shave today. I like them. Don't want to badmouth them. But it is easy for the left these days to bully corporations into adhering to a secular worldview that is very hostile to religion. And that's something we as a society are going to have to deal with. Let's just take this to a larger scale here. Take the Southern Baptist. I grew up Southern Baptist. I actually go to a PCA church. I put the fun in fundamentalist when it comes to the PCA. My preacher. So when I was a kid, went to Mercer University from rural Louisiana, and I thought, went to the First Baptist Church in Jackson, Louisiana. I'll go check out the First Baptist Church in Macon, Georgia. And went in, and they had a woman in the pulpit, and she was talking about how we were too scriptural and needed to be more sacred. Oh, boy. That didn't strike me as right. So I went home, and I called my preacher. I said, Brother Joe, what do I do? What do I do? They had a woman in the pulpit saying we needed to get out of the Bibles and reconnect to our spirit and some such. And He says, find a church with the letters PCA. I would be one, but for the sprinkling. And so I wound up at a PCA church and haven't actually gone back, although I'm currently enrolled in a Southern Baptist seminary, transferred at RTS, and probably going to transfer back to RTS when I have some time to actually go back to class. But nonetheless, there really is a growing hostility towards people of faith in this country. We're going to have to find some way as a country to deal with this, because you're not going to get people of faith to abandon multiple thousands of years of orthodoxy in favor of passing trends, and not just on the alphabet gang issues. There are plenty of other issues out there as well. And it's kind of striking to me to see a lot of people who purportedly are people of faith who are perfectly happy to have the state and corporations turn on people of faith. But go back to the Southern Baptists. You know, the Southern Baptist Mission Board was the first charitable group to get to South Georgia after Hurricane Michael. They were the first charitable group to get into New Orleans after Katrina. The Southern Baptists do incredible work going where even corporations won't go. And why should they be punished by the state for helping so many people and helping kids get good education? It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Joining me by phone before he starts another busy day at the state capitol, the Lieutenant Governor, Jeff Duncan. Welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How about yourself?
Doing well. We got I guess a little under 25 minutes till we get started up in the Senate, and I always start on time at 10 o'clock.
Well, I will try not to keep you then. So out of the gate,
don't worry.
You got an op-ed in the Rome News Tribune. I see this on education. This is National School Choice Week. I was actually just talking about down in Florida, corporations pulling out of the Florida Scholarship Program because Christian schools might get some of the money. And here you've got an op-ed wanting to expand options for parents in this state. And you note, by the way, in here, and I'm glad to see this data, because I was trying to find it, and here it was. The tax credit scholarship program that Georgia has 13,895 scholarships a year for kids to go to private school, and we've still got a huge demand from parents to escape failing schools.
Well, thanks for your compliment on the op-ed. We're really excited. I know it's run all around the state in a number of communities, and you know, the interesting part, I like to start school choice conversations because too often I think it's a polarizing conversation. And I don't think that it really is my three kids. I have a 17-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 9-year-old. They're all in public schools. I'm a product of the public schools. My wife is too. We went to high school together at Chattahoochee High School in Alpharetta. And so I look at this not as a competition, but as an opportunity to center the education around the child and the child's needs and the family situation. And so looking for opportunities to explore the best opportunity to put the children in the best possible position for success is what I'm all about.
Now, part of this comes with increasing hostility in the state from some quarters towards charter schools. And there are now, I guess we're going to have a Senate candidate on the left that wants to shut down the charter school program. And we're seeing more and more hostility even among Democratic presidential campaigns that charter school programs take money out of public schools. And if we want to improve public schools, we need to force parents to send their kids there.
Well, look, I hear so many great stories of, you know, families as I travel around the state, from students themselves, from, you know, kids that have gone on to the next level of education, that really talk about, you know, some of the opportunities that charter schools have created, the environments that they've built. But look, there's incredible public school systems all around the state. You know, I get to firsthand talk about the one in Forsyth County. They're doing an amazing job educating the kids. They're doing an amazing job of being really efficient with the dollars they're getting. And the narrative that they really kind of, or the atmosphere that they create amongst the students wanting to get the, you know, everybody to the next level. And whether that's a job the day after you graduate from high school or going into the military or a 2-year degree or a 4-year degree, I want every community to have that opportunity, because at the end of the day, the greatest gift a child gets early on is a quality K-12 education. The data points back to this in a million different ways. I mean, I think last time we were on, I talked about the foster kids that age out at 18. Only 11% of them even have a high school degree or a GED. I mean, There's no opportunity for success if we can't get the basic blocking and tackling in K through 12. So looking for a chance to make sure every child has an opportunity to get that quality education is what we're fighting for here.
Now, one of the things you mentioned is, and this is a line from your op-ed, I continue to urge state lawmakers to embrace additional options, including a new form of school choice known as education savings accounts, which can be customized to a child's education needs. Can you kind of explain what the ESA would be?
Well, it's just an opportunity to have dollars as a family and focus those in on that child's education so that the dollars are able to follow the child. And you know, so important for that. It's not as a means to shortchange a community or whatnot. It just empowers the family to have the opportunities of choice. And it's a tool. It's a broad discussion. This issue is very interesting because it's not necessarily a party lines issue. It's not necessarily a rural versus metro issue. It's community to community and representative to representative and senator to senator. It is a very personal issue for each and every person because at the end of the day, we're all kind of products of the educational process that we went through in our communities. And so we will continue to have the discussion. We're going to continue to fight hard. I'll tell you this, Eric. The future in Georgia will be even brighter if we continue to improve the way we deliver education in this state in 159 counties and all the cities and all the other departments around and all the different communities in the state. If we're going to be who we want to be, education has got to continue to be an area of focus for us.
Now, there's ample data out there, whether you look at New Orleans or the District of Columbia or Chicago, that we keep pouring more and more money into public schools, and it's increasingly clear money isn't necessarily improve. More money doesn't necessarily improve education. Although you look at a place like Forsyth County that has the best public schools in the state and is now considered the wealthiest county in the state, there seems to be a correlation there among, well, two-parent nuclear households, kids going to school. And is there any effort to address, I guess, the cultural problems that come with education where you've got kids waking up with one parent having to go to work, the kids taking care of themselves, getting themselves to school, and teachers almost feeling like they're babysitters as opposed to educators now?
Well, so I'll give you a personal insight into the Forsyth County mix, and I don't know if this number is 100% accurate. I know that a couple of years ago it was. But we have some of the lowest property taxes in Forsyth County of all the metro counties. So I believe the system is being very efficient with how they're spending those dollars. But here's where I think they're getting it really right, is they're using technology to engage the students, to connect the parents and the teachers. You know, I think about that single mom trying to work, two jobs to get through, get through the day and being able to get their kids off to school. You know, the utilization of technology, it, just like every business in the world is figuring out, it allows you to be more efficient and more effective. So using that opportunity for maybe a teacher to have a quick video conference with the parent, maybe it's an opportunity like we have to be able to see exactly what our kids are doing in schools and what they got on that test earlier in the day or what their schedule and calendar looks like. Those are opportunities for success that I think are a part of this 21st century, you know, next step for us, not just in the economy with technology, but in the way we deliver education. I mean, the milestone tests are a prime example of that. You know, looking for opportunities to empower the teachers to be more nimble, you know, through the school year to be able to make a course adjustment. What if a kid's above grade and needs a little more on their plate every day? What if a kid's a little below grade and needs a little less on their plate or needs a little more reinforcement? To me, we need to give those teachers that opportunity to have a quicker, more nimble process with technology to identify that. And so I think those are the improvements we need to make. You know, technology, I harp on it everywhere I go. But the private sector's figuring it out because they've got shareholders to report to. But I think we're starting to realize in the government piece is that technology allows us to be more effective and more efficient. Well, that means do our job better and do it for less.
I'm glad you mentioned this with teachers because I have a lot of teachers who listen during the summer and then during the evening on their way home on my other show. I hear the number one complaint I hear from teachers all the time is they went in to educate kids and instead they feel like they're bureaucrats and test proctors and they don't actually get to teach anymore.
Yeah, look, my sister is an educator. She's a vice principal now in a school system. She has a great career of kind of teaching at almost every level. Here's what I know. No teacher wakes up in college or going to college and says, I want to study to be a teacher because I want to get rich, right? They do it because they have a gift to be able to teach. They have a passion to work with youth. and they're good at it. And that's what they want to do every single day when they walk in the classroom. They want to educate. They don't want to be a proctor. They don't want to be a report reader. They want to be able to take those kids and navigate them through that curriculum in the 9 months they have them in their classroom. And that, to me, is the ultimate – that's the ultimate goal here, is to be able to empower our educators to do exactly what they love doing.
Well, listen, I'm glad that you're pursuing this, and I know there have been hiccups in the past on the Republican side, even in the Senate, and I hope you're able to rally a coalition to make some changes, because some certainly need to come. I'm always struck by the number of people who just want to do the same things we've always done and give them more money as opposed to trying to innovate.
Yeah, we're going to work hard, and this is a big initiative of ours. I mean, every speech I ever give, I talk about K-12 being the greatest gift we give a child. It is. And we need to make sure that we continue to improve that gift.
Thank you very much. Well, look, okay, let me thread this needle carefully for you before you get out of here. I know you've endorsed Kelly Loeffler in the past. Do you have any thoughts on how this is election may be shaping up?
Yes. Well, I was on stage when the governor appointed Kelly Loeffler. I've gotten to know Kelly Loeffler throughout this process. I mean, what an incredible, you know, story to where she's at today, just personally successful. And, you know, she has just got a very, very strong conservative platform. It's really been neat to watch. And you know, my kids and I, you know, of course, you know, we go home and we're watching all this impeachment stuff going on the TV, when we're, you know, after dinner and whatnot. And to watch how hard she's fighting for our president, to watch, you know, her conservative values, you know, just kind of really continue to be manifested. But, you know, look, here's the elephant in the room on the election. Doug Collins is a really good guy. I really like Doug. Mm-hmm. I've always liked Doug. I just, you know, he called me 2 days ago and we had a great discussion. He's a really, really good guy. But, you know, I support Kelly Loeffler. I hope she continues to you know, look, she's going to bring home, she's going to get to cast a vote in a day or two to acquit our president of this, you know, impeachment sham. I'm proud to see how hard she's fighting for him. Look, at the end of this, however all this shakes out, if Doug Collins is in a runoff against a Democrat, I'll be the first guy to jump in line and put a Doug Collins yard sign in there, and I'll even get the kids out there knocking on doors. But I'm proud to support Kelly, and she has such a great track record, and I continue to be excited as Georgians get to meet her. As she get, you know, her limited opportunities during this impeachment stuff to get back home.
Well, look, I don't mean to put you on the spot there, but thank you, because I feel the same way. I love Doug Collins too, and hate we're at this point. And if he's in a runoff, I will certainly be out knocking on doors for him. And I appreciate your leadership on this education issue very much. Good luck to you today. I don't want to keep you, because I know you got to get down to the floor and bang a gavel and get people going. But anything we can do to help here and with the audience to help you with this education stuff, because I know the audience strongly believes in what you're doing.
Well, just keep fighting hard. And look, you know, these good policy ideas will win because we stick to the facts, we stick to the figures, we stay away from the rhetoric, we stay away from throwing stones at each other. We just simply stay on message that this is an opportunity to put education, put the child at the center of the education, and that ultimately is the goal.
Fantastic. Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, thank you very much for joining us here. Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan from Forsyth County was in the State House, moved over to the State Senate, and education is his big thing. And he and the governor have been tag teaming a lot of these issues together. I got to tell you, and I've mentioned this before about the lieutenant governor, one of the things that I find very remarkable and to his credit is last year there was an education scholarship initiative, and it was being blocked by some of the Republicans. And in the past, when Casey Cagle was lieutenant governor and the Republicans did not have the vote to pursue one of these popular initiatives, they would never bring the legislation to the floor, so the Republicans wouldn't expose themselves for showing they actually didn't support something that the public found popular. And last year, Jeff Duncan forced the education issue to the floor, and it was Republicans who didn't cough up enough votes to get it passed. It was a popular educational scholarship reform program, and here he is. He's bringing it back this year, and he's going to make them do it all over again. And that's what leadership looks like, and that's why I'm impressed with him as the lieutenant governor. He's a great guy generally, and his heart is really into education reform. And we can't just keep throwing money at public schools, and when the situation's not getting better, we got to provide some alternatives to kids. So I'm glad he's out there doing what he's doing. Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, thanks very much for joining us.
Well connected and well respected. It's Eric Erickson, live every weekday.
A word on the recipes. I changed it up. I decided not to send out the pizza dough recipe. Instead, I'm sending out my mom's red beans and rice recipe, and it's already set. It'll go out at noon today. And the reason I'm sending it out is because I am sick and I need spicy food, and you can make red beans and rice spicy. You can make it vegetarian. I use bacon drippings and sausage, but you can make it vegetarian if you're into vegetarian food. But the recipe is already set. It'll go out at noon today. So text the word recipe to 33777. You will get my mom's red beans and rice recipe. You know, before I was allowed to leave home from Louisiana to go to college, we came to Mercer over here in Macon, where I am now, to college, and had to learn how to make jambalaya, gumbo, red beans and rice, family recipes. And my mom makes red beans and rice. Well, it's the way I grew up making red beans and rice. It's the way she grew up making red beans and rice. You have it on Mondays. You always had red beans and rice on Monday. And it's a great recipe. It is not your standard New Orleans red beans and rice, but it's the one I grew up with, and it's the one I like the most. And even my wife likes it. We can't make it a spicy with her cancer. She gets the medicine she's on. Sometimes she gets sores in her mouth, and so she's more sensitive to spicy food now. But man, I love a good bowl of spicy red beans and rice with fresh garlic bread. It's fantastic. And if you want the recipe, text recipe to 33777. You'll get it at noon. It is very easy to make. You will not be intimidated by it. You don't have to make a roux or anything. It's an easy, good recipe. Now, Jeff Duncan, if you want to re-listen to that interview, we've got a podcast for the show where we take the show and we make it in podcast form. And we use the number 33777 for everything. You text Army, you're on the activist list. You text recipe, you get the recipes. If you text the word show, I'll send you back a link to the podcast for Google Play or for iOS. So text show to 33777 if you want to re-listen to Jeff Duncan's interview, which I'll also replay on my evening show this evening. Education reform is one of those things where the chief impediments are always the Republicans in the state legislature. Always the Republicans. And one of the reasons it's Republicans is several of the Republican leaders, they have family members who are in private schools in good communities that are opposed to charter schools because they think it'll undermine their good community public schools. And I don't think that's true, but that's one of the blowbacks you get. And so I appreciate the lieutenant governor fighting the good fight on charter schools. Very diplomatic answer on his part as well, that he is backing Kelly Loeffler. He would support Doug Collins if he gets it. But here's the thing. Notice what he said. Very diplomatic answer there. But notice what he said, that if Doug Collins gets into the runoff with the Democrat, he will support Doug Collins. The only way that Doug Collins would get into a runoff with the Democrat is for there to not be a special election primary. Subtle signal there, I would suspect, from the lieutenant governor that the Senate will kill House Bill 757 if it gets through. But I am told that it has been pulled. House Bill 757 has been pulled, and they've been pulled because they don't have Republican votes for it in the state house. House Bill 757 originally was a bill to move up the qualifying period so that the Secretary of State would be able to get ballots to our soldiers abroad. The Democrats, along with the Speaker of the House, hijacked Barry Fleming's legislation and used it to create a primary to help Doug Collins and help Raphael Warnock. And now there aren't enough Republican votes in the House to get it through, so they've had to pull it and send it back to the Rules Committee. We will see what they do. Keep up the pressure, though. If you want to call your state representative and tell them to oppose this legislation, text the word ARMY to 33777. I will immediately send you back a link that you can click. You can put in your address, and you'll generate an email to your state rep and also a phone call. Now, Alexander somebody, one of the state reps out there is telling people, you know, Barry Fleming supported this. Scott Turner was the only Republican to oppose this. That's not true. Barry Fleming, highly respected chairman of the Judiciary Committee from over in the Augusta area, he wound up voting against his own legislation because he was opposed to the Speaker and the Democrats hijacking his legislation. And now it looks like a majority of the Republicans in the state house may be opposed to this legislation. It is rewriting the rules now that the election's begun. not a smart thing for them to do. Let's go to the phones. Randy, you're going to be up first today. Welcome to the program, Randy.
Hey, Eric, how are you doing today?
Great. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Just wanted to kind of get a plug in again for the Ensoro Foundation.
Yes.
I spoke to you a couple of days ago and everything, and the fact that Kelly Loeffler, who Jeff Duncan and everything, we were all talking about there, she was actually queen of the Starfish Ball this year. So if you kind of Google Starfish Ball, that sort of thing, you will find lots of pictures and then more information about the Ensoro Foundation.
Well, you know, tell people about the Ensoro Foundation, because, you know, until you had called me, Randy, the last time, I never heard of it, and it just sounds like a great group, and please explain it to folks.
Yes, it was a foundation established by Daryl Mays. Daryl lives here in Georgia, and he established it quite some time ago for kids who age out of foster homes. So that they will have funds available to go to college.
That's fantastic. And so Kelly Loeffler was involved this year with it?
Absolutely, yes.
Good.
And there are many others. Like I say, if you actually visit the website, you'll see you know, folks who are on the board. And they're people who a lot of people will know.
Good. Well, look, thank you very much for highlighting that. And this, again, it's her being involved in the community. Can I be real honest with y'all as we go to break? I'm not impressed with her rollout. I'm not impressed. And she is a smart, capable person. But the social media stuff and these ads, I'm sorry, I'm not impressed. She can do better. Her team is doing her a disservice, I think. And I know parts of her team, and they're good people, and I know they just want to boost her name ID, but we gotta do better on this. And if there's one good thing to come out of Doug Collins challenging, is it's going to force them all to be on their A game. Now, there is some movement there. We do need to get into impeachment, but God help me. I'm so tired of talking about impeachment, and I got to do it when we come back, because there actually is a lot of impeachment news we needed to consider. And I've got a few scoops for those of you listening. I've got some intel from the Senate when we come back.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big.